The new agent in charge of the DEA in Los Angeles has his work cut out for him. Drugs are killing Americans at alarming rates. In fact, for the age group 18 to 45, drugs are the number one cause of death, specifically fentanyl overdoses. Last year, the CDC estimates that more than 110,000 people lost their lives to drug poisonings in the U.S. That's more than 300 people a day dying of drug poisoning, and the problem just seems to keep growing. We'll talk about what the DEA is doing to stem that tide. And then there's the problem of addiction. Nearly 50 million people in the U.S. have a substance use disorder. And alcohol addiction is even more pervasive than drugs. An addiction expert tells us what can be done and where the biggest problems are these days. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. At the end of last year, Los Angeles DEA Special Agent in Charge Bill Bodner retired. And we're grateful that he's been a frequent guest here on our program. But now we'd like to welcome his replacement. Stepping into his shoes and assuming the very challenging job of Special Agent in Charge of the DEA for the Los Angeles Field Division is Matthew Allen. And Matthew, welcome. It's so good to see you here. And
thank you.
You know, Bill always gave us a lot of very significant information. And I know you will be following in those footsteps because you and I have a bit of a history before this as well.
Absolutely.
You know, you have quite a history with the DEA.
Yes, sir.
And just as a little 30-second cliff notes here, you've been in Afghanistan. You've been to a number of different places where you've been embedded,
yes,
trying to do things on behalf of the DEA. And just give us a little thumbnail.
Right. So I hired on with the DEA back in 2002. And my first post of duty was here in Los Angeles. So this has become kind of my adopted home. That's when I first met Bill Bodner, as a matter of fact. So I've known Bill for over 20 years. Been a pretty important figure in my career. And, you know, very big shoes to fill there. But, you know, I spent my formative years as an agent here in Los Angeles. And went to Afghanistan for a couple of years, you know, going after the funding sources for the insurgency. Then back to this area, spent a couple of years in Mexico City, as assistant regional director and acting regional director for that region. And then was able to promote to the senior executive level and back to California.
You know, I'm sure that you probably can give a better perspective, but it seems like over the years, things have not necessarily gotten better. They've gotten more complicated.
They have gotten more complicated. Hey, listen, the cartels that are involved in pushing this stuff on our streets, they evolve at an alarming rate, right? Whenever we catch up with something, they're trying to figure out another move to stay ahead of us. So it's a constant struggle.
So in your new job, you've got goals.
I do.
What are they?
Well, there's a couple of different fronts, right? The DEA is historically we're an enforcement agency, right? So as far as enforcement goes, the things we're laser focused on right now, fentanyl and methamphetamine. I don't think that's going to be a shock to anybody, right?
But are those things, what's your greatest concern?
Fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because it just poses all kinds of problems we've never seen before. A lot of the people who are dying from fentanyl overdoses, they're unwitting users of fentanyl, right? They don't know they're taking fentanyl. You're talking about situations, and this is a real situation, where you'll have a 16-year-old cheerleader that twists her ankle at cheerleading practice. She's concerned she won't be able to perform, you know, Friday night for the game. Friend of hers says, hey, take this. I got it off of, you know, social media. And her parents find her dead in the bedroom the next morning.
And we've heard these stories because we've followed about 15 fentanyl families,
okay,
who have lost their children.
Yeah.
And many of them have started nonprofits to,
yes,
try to keep other children from ending up in the same situation,
yes,
fighting social media, fighting algorithms, all sort of things. What is it you have to fight?
The natural curiosity of childhood, almost, you know, and you're right when you say that a lot of these families have started nonprofits, you know, and they've become involved in this fight with us. And hey, they have the loudest voices, you know, they really do. And we need them to stand up and talk about it. You know, part of it, we need to take the stigma off of it, right? Because you talk to some families because they're terrified someone's going to think their child was a drug addict, you know, and it's just not the case.
Or the appearance of.
Or the appearance of, exactly, right? And so taking the stigma away is one thing. Addressing that natural childhood curiosity. May I tell a little story?
Please.
Listen, I spoke with a family who lost a college-age son to fentanyl. They have two other children who are in college. Those children now have become activists themselves, right? So when they go to parties, they take fentanyl test kits. And they'll test, you know, because obviously there's going to be things at college parties, right? So they'll offer, hey, before you take that, let us test it for you, you know? And they told me the story of a friend of theirs who came up. He had five pills that he bought from someone, from the same person. They tested them. Three of them tested positive for fentanyl. And the reaction was, but these two are cool, right? I mean, how do you stop that? You know, just, I mean, what more do you need?
I'm not sure a lot of people really understand what fentanyl is. And just as a case in point, I had this little medical procedure, and they wanted to give me a little something to knock me out. And I said, what are you going to give me? They said, fentanyl. And I went, really?
Right.
You're going to give me fentanyl? Right. After all these stories I've done about fentanyl and all these kids that have died and all these families that have been torn apart. But I didn't understand what fentanyl's real purpose is.
Right. Big difference in pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl and what we're seeing on the street. The difference is one of them is made in a professional, sterile laboratory environment by people that know what they're doing, and the other one's made in somebody's mom's basement, right? And you know, another thing that fits into that, and this kind of goes along with the testing thing, too, is kind of what I call the chocolate chip cookie theory, right? When you make chocolate chip cookies, you dump the chips in, right, and you get a cookie. There might be seven chips on one side, two on the other side. That's what happens with fentanyl, right? So you could have two. You and I could sit down. We could split a pill in half. You take half of it. You're perfectly fine, and I keel over dead.
What an interesting analogy.
Yeah.
I've never heard it put that way, but, you know, there are so many tentacles to this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about China for a minute.
Okay.
They make the devices that end up being the forms for the pills to be made. Explain that.
So a lot of pill presses being manufactured there that find their way over to Mexico mostly, some of them into the United States. The big thing, you know, China's big role is obviously precursor chemicals. There's just an unlimited supply of chemicals coming out of China, going to the major ports like Port of Manzanillo in Mexico. You know, for the first time, because of the availability of these chemicals, right, because of what the cartels are able to get their hands on, you know, at any time, we're seeing kind of a weird thing in you know, drug enforcement. Typically, the drug market is driven by demand, right?
Right.
Well, okay, cocaine's in high demand. Let's start shipping cocaine, right? What we're seeing now is the cartels controlling the demand through the supply. Because by doing things like putting the fake pills on the street, creating addicts, right, pushing the fentanyl. We have so much fentanyl we don't know what to do with. We can make it at the drop of a hat. Let's just keep pushing this. And that's what they're doing.
You know, we've got so much to talk about, so stay with me for another segment. Because coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we talk more with Special Agent in Charge Matthew Allen. And we discuss the ways that the agency is trying to address the huge amount of drugs spread across our cities. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and Matthew Allen, Special Agent in Charge of the DEA for Los Angeles, is still with us. You know, we heard the big news this week coming out of the DEA of the rescheduling, I guess is the right term.
Yes.
Of marijuana, cannabis, from a class 1 to a class 3. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always sort of heard and thought, and I thought we sort of educated ourselves to understand that marijuana was a gateway drug. And now we hear some of these changes.
Right. Listen, not surprised if you want to talk about that. That's obviously big news right now. Mm-hmm. It is something that's currently happening, right, and it's currently underway, so I'm not really at liberty to discuss it. There's a lot of administrative procedures to go through. But, you know, it's interesting you mentioned gateway because, you know, another big gateway is what kids are finding in their parents' medicine cabinets, right? And that kind of leads me to talk about what we just had this past Saturday, which is called Take Back, Operation Take Back. It's something that the DEA has been doing for years. We do it nationwide, and we go out to multiple areas in the communities that we serve, and we set up stations. And basically what we do is we receive all of your unused medicine, both prescription, store-bought, everything.
From the medicine cabinet.
From the medicine cabinet. We encourage everyone to clean out their medicine cabinets with the stuff they're not using and bring it down and turn it in. And you would be shocked how they – I mean, listen, in the L.A. area alone, or at least what the L.A. Field Division covers, we took in over 20,000 pounds.
Oh, wow.
20,000 pounds, right? And I mean, you see everything from, you know, Oxycontin to Percocets to, you know, I mean, you see some crazy stuff that people leave in their their cabinets. And it also has an environmental aspect to it too, because you don't want to be flushing that stuff down the toilet, right? It gets into the sewer system, the water system, and it's just not good for anything.
It sounds a lot like local police departments, sheriff's departments that have gun take backs.
Very similar. Very similar, right?
Trying to get stuff off the street.
Let's just get it off the street, right? Before your curious 14-year-old decides to take one of those pills mom has left in her cabinet.
But to put that in some perspective, I mean, how much of a gateway is the medicine cabinet?
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, because that's there in the home, right? And, I mean, kids are observant.
And we're looking at that gateway from this past week right now.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's a huge problem.
It's a huge problem.
And how do you address that other than taking things back from homes?
Well, listen, that's just a starting point, right? I mean, that's taking it out of the home so it's not even there. Hey, enforcement, community outreach, you know, it's a double barrel approach, right, that we're using. I mean, we're living in a time where, hey, when I grew up, if somebody wanted to buy drugs, they had to go to the right or wrong area of town.
Right.
They had to know what corner to go to. They had to know who to talk to or who to call. Now kids just get on their cell phone, send a couple of emojis, tell their parents they're walking the dog, meet a car out front, and they're back.
And when you talk about emojis, just to be clear,
yes,
you're talking about emojis on one of the services, sure, that may indicate a dealer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have their own coded language. All these emojis mean different things, right? And there's a lot of them. And anybody that's interested can go to DEA.gov. We have all that documented. They can pull it up and look at it. So, you know, in case you want to take a look at your kid's phone, you can see what it means.
I know you have charts and things showing all,
yes,
those. We've actually showed some of that here,
okay,
on this,
good,
program. But I mean, how much of a problem is social media and these sort of selling things that occur with these emojis?
Well, it's huge. I mean, it's just made access to this stuff like incredibly easy. There's not even money exchanges hands, right? You send it on Zelle or Venmo or something like that. You get on social media, you order it. So, I mean, no money changes hands. You know, it's all done on the phone.
The DEA recently prosecuted drug poisoning cases.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. Why that's important to families.
That's incredibly important because I think it holds the person who sold their loved one that substance that resulted in their death, it holds them personally accountable, right? I mean, it's no secret what this stuff is doing to our communities, right? And it's also no secret. The people who are selling this stuff, they know what they're selling. If you're buying a pill from anywhere other than a pharmacy, it's fake. It's fentanyl, okay? So the people that are selling this stuff, they know what they're doing. And what we're doing is we're looking at these things like a traditional, almost more of a homicide investigation, right? Where we go,
it's a forensic approach.
It is. We go, we evaluate things, we conduct our own investigation. We have all the parameters set now to where we're helping to work with like the sheriffs and the state and local counterparts, right? So that when an officer arrives at a scene like this, you know, we've kind of set what we need in order to do a federal investigation on this.
But a lot of these people, and I didn't want to stop you but a lot of these people are anonymous online. They see the emoji. Somehow, mm-hmm, some mule is sent over to hand off the, yeah, drugs. Mm-hmm. How do you get to these people?
Because we've got some of the best investigators in the world. And we live in the Los Angeles area. We have the best detectives in the world, you know? And listen, they're out there every day doing this. I mean, on a weekly basis, they're out searching homes, pulling over vehicles, conducting undercover buys. You know, I mean, it really kind of hits home, especially with what we saw in Charlotte the other day, right? With the four individuals from the Marshall Task Force. I mean, what the men and women of law enforcement are out there doing on a daily basis and how dangerous it actually is.
But you've got your army, they've got their army.
Right.
And it's war. Right?
It's a fight.
It's a fight.
It's a fight, you know? I don't typically tend to use the war on drugs statement, but
yeah.
You know, that's to me, it's like anything else, right? There's murder.
Yeah.
Not going to stop it, right? But you got to keep fighting it.
Yeah.
You know, sexual assaults, you got to keep fighting it. You know, drugs taking over, she's got to keep fighting it.
Right. Right. Matthew Allen.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much for joining us, the new special agent in charge of the DEA for Los Angeles. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we take a look at the human impact of drugs. Substance abuse disorders are growing in the United States, and it's not just fentanyl and opioids. There's been a resurgence in the use of methamphetamines. We look at the impact of that right after this. Don't go away. While we're talking about drugs, we have to talk about the rising tide of addiction here in the United States. Just last year, more than 46 million people over the age of 12 met the criteria for having a substance abuse disorder. That's about 16.5% of the population. Of those, more than 29 million had an alcohol use disorder, and 24 million were classified as having a drug use disorder. Looks like we may have a problem. Let's talk with our new guest, Dr. Itay Danovich, the chair of the Cedars-Sinai Department of Psychiatry and Addiction. He's an expert on it, and good to see you. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, let me ask you, in your years of working with addiction, do you think things are getting worse?
Well, things addiction is an unending problem. So it has evolved. It has changed in its shape and form, but it has persisted throughout. I think that the element of addiction that's gotten worse is that there's more access to highly potent and lethal medications that have resulted in significant increases in overdose deaths. And the things that have been getting better is gradually better understanding of what addiction is and what to do about it so that we can help people.
And let's be clear, addiction is nothing new. When I was a kid, about 150 years ago, I remember a movie with Frank Sinatra called The Man with the Golden Arm, I think it was called, and it was about being a heroin addict. Well, I was a little boy. This back in the 50s. This has been an ongoing thing forever and ever and ever. So now, is it opioids that are to blame? Is it fentanyl that's to blame? What's to blame?
Well, I think that's right. As long as humans have existed, humans have been intrigued with things that can alter their states of mind and can intoxicate themselves. There are cave paintings that describe and characterize early experiences with intoxication of all sorts. And as long as people have gotten intoxicated, some people have run into problems, either accidents related to intoxication of other unintended consequences. And a subset of people develop this thing which we call addiction. So addiction is a result of taking an addictive substance, but not everybody that takes an addictive substance becomes addicted. The risk for becoming addicted has to do with genetics, with our biology, and also with psychological factors and social factors. And the way we define addiction is really a pattern of substance use, could be alcohol, could be drugs, that's characterized by harmful consequences, by loss of control, by compulsive use, and by inability to stop despite all of these negative consequences. That's really what addiction is. And not everybody that tries an addictive substance goes on to develop that. But it's an incredibly prevalent problem that's been with us as long as we've existed.
Yeah. Hey, you know, to counter that, you use things like what, methadone and other treatments that replace opioids. Is that good? Is that bad?
Yeah, well, we now understand that addiction is a disease, and it's a treatable disease. So for a long time, we've had effective psychotherapies that help people change their behavior and to achieve recovery. And we've also discovered several medication treatments that help for some types of substance use disorders. Methamphetamine is an example of a type of addiction for which there are very effective psychotherapeutic treatments, but there aren't any particularly effective medication treatments. There are some medications that have shown some effects, but no substantial effects. In contrast, opioid addiction or opioid use disorder is a condition whose treatment has been revolutionized by medications that really dramatically save people's lives and enable them to achieve longstanding recovery.
You know, when we were talking with Matthew Allen in the last segment, we talked about cannabis. We talked about marijuana as a gateway drug. Now, you're an addiction expert. How do you view that?
Well, the notion of marijuana as a gateway was described decades ago when people observed that young people typically navigated through a pathway of smoking tobacco and drinking alcohol and then using cannabis and using other drugs. And so this theory was developed about whether cannabis actually was a gateway, whether it increased people's predisposition to develop addiction to other drugs. That's been studied extensively, and there's no evidence, there's not good evidence that cannabis itself increases the risk of developing addiction to other drugs, on the one hand. And on the other hand, early use of all substances of abuse, tobacco, alcohol, cannabis, increases risks of harm, increases risk of addiction, and is associated with a whole bunch of lifelong consequences.
Hey, let me ask you, do you think this relaxing, this rescheduling of marijuana by the DEA to from a class one to a class three, a good move, a necessary move, or just nebulous?
Well, I think overall it's a good move because I think it's going to enable additional research, which has been limited by the DEA scheduling status. And right now we have policy in a lot of parts of the country that's been decided by ballot initiatives as opposed to science. The science has been limited by the difficulty studying cannabis to determine what its therapeutic effects are and how to leverage them. And we also know that treating cannabis as an illicit substance and using criminal justice interventions doesn't help people that go on to develop problems, and it worsens disparities that people experience. So I think overall it's a good thing. However, it's a double-edged sword. We've already seen significant increases in cannabis use, and with that, cannabis-associated problems. And it's quite possible that the reduction in scheduling is going to also be associated with increases use.
All right. Dr. Itay Denovich, thanks so much for talking to us. We'll have you back again because that's a lot of really good information you have. Thank you again. And Fox 11 News In Depth will continue right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.